ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Are we in Miami or we went outside? I see. But we're close. Radhanand, do you live in Miami? He's gone off. Some of you here present, you live in Miami?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. A proud inhabitant of Miami. I was just thinking, presumably the devotees here are well aware of this. There's that by its very name it must be extremely materialistic. My, am, I am, me.
Or Maya me. Maya me.
Maya.
Me.
Maya me. Me, Maya me hun. Maya ka prabhav se prabhavit hun. If you understand me, Maya me hun, then you're already one step out. If we understand we're in Maya, then we're already at least got some idea of how to get out of that. But the nature of illusion in this material world is that most people don't even realize that they're in any illusion. And even though that concept is within the Vedic culture, which we nowadays normally call Hinduism, which is a misnomer, but it's the common word, and the religious processes that have derived from that, namely Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, there's this understanding of the concept of Maya, illusion. And that illusion, that my am me, me, I, me and mine, that is known in Sanskrit as aham mama bhav. I, the feeling of I and mine. Krishna, in Bhagavad Gita, describes the consciousness, in this chapter 16 especially, he describes the way of thinking of the asuras. Srila Prabhupada translated the word asura as demon, ungodly. So the crux of the attitude of the demons is Ishvaro ham aham bhogi. I aham. I'm the controller and I am the enjoyer. So I and mine. Aham mama. I and mine. This is illusion. That illusion, moha, maya, means that which is not. Maya, that which is not. Practically a synonym of that, or maya, is the energy which causes moha, illusion, or bewilderment. So this term, moha, is used to describe, in Srimad Bhagavatam, is used to describe the consciousness of aham mama, I, me, and mine. Now you may think this is all very technical, but it really applies to every one of us. We're in this material world because we're in illusion. So this moha, this bewilderment, by which we think in terms of I, me, and mine, is described in Srimad Bhagavatam in a verse which most people don't like to hear. It just gets too close to our illusion. But nevertheless, if we are at all to come out of this illusion and be actually benefited, then we should hear this. So, here we go. Here's the verse. Pungsastriya mithuni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantimahu ato griha kshetra sutapta vitayar janasya mohoyam ahamameti. Did you hear that last line? Moho, that's the word moha. It becomes slightly adjusted according to context. Janasya mohoyam ahamameti. Iti means thus. So the shocking and painful translation of this verse. You know what it is? Translation of this verse? Yeah. Is that sexual attraction between male and female is the basis of material existence. And when male and female become joined, then it is as if a knot is tied in the heart. It means it becomes very strong attachment. What causes our existence in this material world? Material attachment. And that attachment between male and female expands or becomes further manifest. The word used for female in this verse is stri. Most of you know the word vistar. Those of you who know Indian languages, which is most of the people present here, you know the word vistar. So stri and vistar means expansion, becoming bigger. So stri and vistar, they come from the same root. So stri, which is of course not the only name, they are not the only word in Sanskrit for woman. Actually, Sanskrit works on a completely different basis to that of a language like English, in which terms are assigned. This is called a microphone. It could have been called a babble-dabble. It could be called anything, but you have to call it something. But in Sanskrit, all the words are derived from roots, which gives the quality of something, and thus it is known. Just like tree, vriksh, means that which is cut, or padapa, that which drinks through its leg. So, stri means who expands. So when a man becomes linked with a woman, this is the version of Srimad Bhagavatam, it won't be very popular at any time or any place, but especially in modern America. But anyway, truth should be stated. Palatable, or generally truth is unpalatable. Almost always, even mundane truths. So, what happens is that the attraction between male and female, that expands. Then one has to have a house. Another name for wife is grihini, is grihastha. I mean, the male grihastha is known as grihastha, one who is fixed in his house, and grihini, who is in the house. This is also unpopular in the modern age. As I often say when I'm speaking in Hindi, Aaj kal sab ghar wali office wali ho gaye hai. All the housewives have become office goers. So the term ghar wali is still used, but they spend more time at the office than in the home. So, ato griha, then one has a house and one becomes attached to it. We speak of my house. Kshetra, which literally means field. Traditionally, people would, a house means not just a house, but there'd be some land attached to it also, which one can cultivate. And kshetra can also mean the broader land. In the modern age, we may think of that in terms of America. I love America. God bless America. Why America only? They don't like anyone else? God should only like the Americans? And in India now also there's nationalistic consciousness, which is imported from the West. Otherwise there is no such thing as nationalism. In fact, all over the world it's quite recent. It's another Western concept that India has imported, like cricket and democracy and office walion and things like that. So ato griha kshetra. One becomes attached to one's country, one's land of birth. Janani janma bhumischa swargam eva gariyasi. As the saying goes, that one's mother and one's land of birth is more dear than heaven. So that's not a shastric injunction, it's just another expression of maya. It's not that everything that's in Sanskrit is authoritative and true. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes quote something in Sanskrit which is absolutely bogus. I'm thinking of the verse of Charvak, which he quoted. Charvak was an atheist who said that Rirang kritva gritam pibet yava jivet sukam jivet bhasmi bhutasya dehasya king puna agamano bhavet. He says that beg, borrow or steal is the English saying. Beg, which more or less confirmed translates. Beg, borrow or steal, but somehow get ghee and live happily. Eating ghee. Because anyway, when you die, your body will be burned and you won't come back again. This is atheism. Anatmavad. There is no atma. There's no soul. So, even though it's in Sanskrit, it's nonsense and rascaldom. So, we shouldn't trust everything that's in Sanskrit. So, ato griha kshetra sutta. Sutapta. This means sutta and sutta, but especially sutta, which means sons, and sutta means daughters. One becomes attached to children. And generally people think that's very nice. And can be very nice. if the children are trained in Krishna consciousness, but it binds us to this material world. Painful to hear, isn't it? Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, gives the description of Kapila Dev speaking to his own mother. About how a person hearing the attempts of his child to speak in broken language becomes, his heart melts. Isn't that wonderful? But Kapila said, no, it's not wonderful, because he becomes more and more illusioned by that and forgets the real purpose of life, which is to become free from all illusion. Ato Griha Kshetra Sutta Apta means relatives, Swajan Kutumba. relatives, society, friends, and Vitta, money. We become attached to all these things. And family life is the focal point of this janasya moha, of a person's illusion by which he thinks in terms of I, me, and mine. So, was that painful? It's a difficult thing to hear, isn't it? And we may think, well, it's okay for sannyasis, they can come around and bash all the grihasthas. But actually, it is the duty of the sannyasis to say this to grihasthas, and of that of grihasthas to hear it, because there are four stages of life within the varnashram system. Brahmacharya, which very few people undergo nowadays. The grihastha stage. Then vanaprastha, when the children are, as is said in Indian English, settled. That means married or at least got a job. Because nowadays they don't marry until the parents are almost dead. And then they put it off and put it on. They wonder why they can't get their 40-year-old daughter married. She's already old enough to be a grandmother. So it's the duty of the sannyasis to say this so that in the midst of their grihastha responsibilities, which are responsibilities, it's not that grihastha life is to be given up whimsically, but one should, from time to time at least, be reminded that the real responsibility of human life is not to be materialistic, as Krishna states. This is a verse. I'll now quote a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Krishna to Uddhava. He was quoting Dattatreya, speaking to Prahlad. It's a very important verse which should be the compass of our lives. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he once stated that I will keep on preaching this verse up to my last breath. Do you know that verse? Labdva sudurlabhamidang bahusambhavante. Excuse me. Manusham arthadam anityam apiha dhira. Turnam yatetana patedanu mrityayava nishrayasaya vishaya khalu sarvatasyat. You may have heard the word dhira in this verse. Maybe you know that word dhira from Bhagavad Gita. Krishna often uses the word dhira or stitadhi. Dhira means one whose intelligence is very steady and sober. So Krishna says that we have now gained something. We're all in the position of possessing something which is very rare to attain and which can be attained only after many, many births. What is that? Who said that? Ah, yeah, that is the human form of life. The human form of life is very rare and is only attained after many, many lives. And it is very valuable. You may think, well, yes, we can enjoy at a more sophisticated level. The human is the most intelligent, so we're not just like dolphins or buffaloes. We can enjoy in a very sophisticated way. But in this verse, Krishna says, Vishaya kalu sarvata syat. In every situation, in every species of life, the possibility for enjoying this world is there. And as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, if people, for instance, want to enjoy sexual enjoyment, then they'd be much better off in the body of a pigeon or a monkey. Because humans have limited capacity, whereas compared to the pigeons and monkeys. Or if one simply likes to eat and eat and eat without discrimination as to what is proper food and not proper food, then one can enjoy much better as a pig. But dhira, one who is very sober, he should see that this human form of life is valuable because it affords the opportunity for getting free from the cycle of birth and death. One should be intelligent enough to understand that this material world is simply full of misery. And therefore, before one's inevitable death, this body must die. And life isn't very long. Doesn't last very long. One should do whatever is required in this life so that we don't have to get born again. That's very good advice, isn't it? Those who are born in Hindu families and Buddhist families and Jain families and Sikhs, they all believe in reincarnation, theoretically. And theoretically, they may have heard that, yes, life is full of suffering. But they're not very serious about it. There are also the Vedavadarata, who Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, who think that, well, in the Vedas, it is stated that if we perform pious activities, then we will go to the heavenly world, we will enjoy there, and when that's finished, we shall come back to this world in a pious situation, then we will again perform pious activities, then again we will go up. So what's all this talk about liberation? No need. Krishna, he describes this in Bhagavad Gita, that kshine punye. What's the first line of that verse? Tetang bhuktva swargalokang vishalam kshine punye martyalokang vishanti evang trai dharma manu prappana gatagatam kama kama labhante. Krishna points out the futility of this mentality by saying that after one has enjoyed the great happiness in Swarga Loka, when one's stock of pious results is depleted, Then again, one comes back to this world. In this way, by performing Vedic activities, one comes and goes, back and forth, being propelled by material desire. Now, materialistic followers of the Vedas who hear this verse will agree. Yes, it's very good. That exactly describes our position. They don't find anything discomforting in this. They think, yeah, we'll perform pious activities, we'll go up, we'll come down, again we'll perform pious activities, again we'll go up, again we'll come down. But persons who are dhira, who are more intelligent, who are actually intelligent. Real intelligence doesn't mean how to write software or how to make new gizmos or how to build a business. Well, that's definitely some kind of intelligence. The birds also have intelligence how to build nests. Certain fish have the intelligence, being in the middle of the ocean, how to get back to their spawning grounds in a river. So there are various kinds of intelligence, but the highest intelligence is to consider what is the best thing I could and should do, and then to pursue that. Or, seeing as everyone is interested in themselves, we could think, what is the best thing for me? What is my real self-interest? And then pursue that. And both endeavors come to the same end, that our real swartha, our real self-interest, is Vishnu, to worship Krishna. Our real self-interest is to understand that Ishvaroham aham bhogi, thinking like this, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. To think like this, or to aspire for this position, is nonsense, because Krishna, he is the controller, he is the enjoyer. to understand one's real self-interest means to understand one's constitutional position. Who am I? What am I really supposed to be doing? If we ask most people, who am I, they will answer something like this. Well, I'm Martin Goldwell, I'm 24 years old, I'm a resident of Miami, I'm a US citizen, I'm just passed out of college and I'm looking for a job. And they'll define themselves in terms of their body and everything in relation to the body. But if we ask Martin Goldwell, who's 24 years old, where he was 25 years ago, most people, when we ask this question, they become bewildered. I mean, what do you mean? What do you mean? I didn't exist. And where will you be in 124 years from now? Well, I'll be dead. No. You existed before this body existed, and after this body ceases to exist, you will continue to exist. You are not the body. Which means that you're not Martin Goldwell, you're not 24 years old, you're not a resident of Miami, you're not a student who's ex-student who's looking for a job, you're not a US citizen. All these are simply what is called upadhi, or a designation on the self. It's an unreal, ultimately unreal. You say, well, it's real, you know. Here's my driving license. It says, you see, it's real. It's authorized by the U.S. government, or state of Florida. I mean, you can't get much more authorized than that, can you? Well, folks, I've got news for you. The government of the United States is also in Maya. They may be authorities in world affairs, but in understanding of our actual constitutional position, via their educational institutions and practically everything else, the whole culture, it reinforces our illusion rather than breaks it. By promoting nationalism, God bless America, stars and stripes flying all over the place. I don't think I've ever seen any country where they fly the national flag more than in America. Is it? You don't? I've traveled in many countries, but I think especially it came up after 9/11. But was it before that also? Yeah, it's very very strong feeling of we are American. But that's illusory, actually. The sense of this I, me, and mine. I am American. I am proud to be an American. But it's just a blip in time. Just if we see eternal time, the amount of time we have this body is very brief. It's just a blip. So, how are you, American? It's another illusion by which our human life is spoiled. Quite likely, if one strongly identifies with America, one will be born in America again, because we tend to get what we aspire for. Of course, there's no guarantee it'll be in a human body. Those McDonald's hamburgers you ate, you might be in one of them in the next lifetime round. I'm sure you're not all McDonald's eaters. I hope not. If you are, please stop it immediately. Because it doesn't do you any good karmically, that's for sure. Even health-wise, it's quite likely that it doesn't do you much good. So this is not meant to be a diatribe against America. It's just that I happen to be in America. If I was in any other country, I could say the same about it. But it brings the point more home if you use local examples. In India, I often say that someone who's saying, I'm Indian. Or, I'm Hindu. God say kaho, hum Hindu hai. And then part of being a good Indian, especially as the Hindus define it, is to not like Pakistan. It used to be Russia in America. Now again, it's becoming Russia. You've got to to have strong national consciousness, you have to have a prominent enemy. So I'm told, especially in UP, many people refer to the toilet as Pakistan. May Pakistan ja raha hoon. So if you're so much in that consciousness, then there's thinking Pakistan, then next life, guess where you might be born? Then you'll be thinking, oh, sab Indian shaitan hai. Then you'll be anti-Indian. Then you might get born in India again. And it goes on and on and on. Anyway, how long will this Pakistan last? We don't know. It's India, Pakistan is a British invention. Anyway. But anyway, this is the nature of illusion. That we think in terms of I, me, and mine. And although those of you who came from India to America might have first been shocked when you came at the materialism. Actually, it's not that India is devoid of materialism, because thinking in terms of I, me, and mine is everywhere. It's not a monopoly of America, for sure. Generally, we say America, we think of America as being materialistic because the expansion of material enjoyment, the opportunities for that, are very great. A pretty gross material enjoyment also. And I would expect in Miami more so, as it's a tourist town. And generally, touristic towns, they have lots of degraded activities going on. But everywhere is materialistic. You can be pious and materialistic also. Just like the Vedavadarata. They go up to the heavenly planets by... No, they're not sinful. They're not grossly sinful. You have to perform pious activities. So they perform many pious activities. They'll perform sacrifices. They'll give charity. They'll dig wells. They'll follow their dharma. They perform pious activity, but they're not spiritually minded. They don't have the spiritual consciousness, spiritual consciousness begins when one goes beyond the platform of ordinary dharma, which can be, dharma is often equated with pious activities. So, spiritual life begins with Brahma Jignyasa, inquiring into the nature of the ultimate. What is the ultimate reality? What is that reality which underlies everything? What is the source of everything? Most people don't ask such questions. They're content if they lead a pious life. They think if I do good and be good, that's good. Well, it is good, but it's not good enough to take us out of the cycle of birth and death, which ultimately it means it doesn't do us any real good. Because as long as we're in this material world, we have to suffer birth, death, old age, disease. And we are in defiance of Krishna. That's the real problem in this material world. So, spiritual life begins with Brahma Jignasa. Kim tad Brahma kim adhyatmam? Arjuna asks Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. What is the Brahma that Krishna refers to several times? There are many words in Bhagavad Gita which Krishna uses which suggest that Arjuna was familiar with them and that Arjuna was not ignorant of the philosophy that Krishna spoke in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna and Arjuna, from the beginning of their discourse, they use words like karma, yoga, and of course these words have entered English now, largely with misunderstandings. Largely with misunderstandings. What to mention the word guru, is that the champion world's number one misused word in India as well as in the West. But more you could say obscure terms also like sthitadhi, which I don't know if you're familiar with unless you're a student of Bhagavad Gita, sthita pragya. So Arjuna was aware of, we could say, the basic Vedic worldview, but he didn't have a very clear understanding. He was what we would nowadays call a pious Hindu. He was concerned with his performing his swadharma, his own particular dharma. Now with the breakdown of the Varnashram system in India, Hinduism is being redefined. But previously, to be a pious Hindu means that one should perform one swadharma, which is basically in five divisions. That means as a brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, and one more is stri, stri dharma. The duties of women are the same, but they are modified by the dharma that their husband follows. But their dharma, which in this context is probably most translatable into English as duty, sacred duty, is to serve their husband. So if one does this, one becomes pious. Of course, Arjuna, he was a great pure devotee of Krishna, but he had a role in Krishna's pastimes as a kshatriya. And we can just imagine that the kshatriyas, they had so many servants and officers, and just like we were discussing on the way here, how there's a sense of pride in being a member of the U.S. Army, that it's something very creditable, and people respect that. So we can imagine that those in the retinue of Krishna and Arjuna, Krishna and Arjuna were fighting, but they had their team behind them also. When they went back, the people helped them with their bath and clean up and feeding them. And how many men does it take to put one soldier in the battlefield? Here, Hanuman, what's the answer to that? You've been doing your studies? How many men does it take to support one soldier in the battlefield? At least 10. I was going to say that also, yeah. So that would have been true at the time of the Kurukshetra battle also. So those in the retinue of Krishna and Arjuna, they must have been all devotees. So you can just imagine every evening, Krishna and Arjuna, strong men. Krishna, of course, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is Purushottama, the best of all males. So, and come back from fighting, and all their retinue is ready to receive them, and very happy to serve such masters. And it must be a matter of pride for them to say, "Yes, I'm a servant of Krishna and Arjuna." So that is our constitutional position. That is beyond ordinary piety, to be a servant of Krishna. Servants of Krishna, they may serve in so many ways, just like Krishna and Arjuna, when they were fighting on the battlefield, they had so many servants. There would be doctors, they pick up so many wounds throughout the day, and they're fighting in an atmosphere full of dust, because in the battlefield there's so much dust and blood. And sometime during the Kurukshetra fight, there was so much blood being thrown into the air mixed with the dust, and it became a rain shower of blood mixed with dust. War is never pleasant. And then the animals, they also needed, the animals that were not decommissioned due to injury, they would require to be some attention before they could go back to fight the next day. So the veterinarians, or the people to carry water. At Kurukshetra, there's no river close by there. Of course, Arjuna, he knew the art of making water wells by shooting an arrow. The arrows that were shot in the battle, we shouldn't think they were just like some primitive people, but these, they're actually very advanced weapons because they were powered by mantra. So shooting an arrow doesn't just mean, of course there was strength and skill there, but they were powered by mantras. So one arrow, when shot, can become 1,000 arrows. Or one arrow can, it may become a fire weapon, which will just devour a whole phalanx. And then to counter that, someone may shoot an arrow with the water mantra, and that will extinguish the fire. So it's actually very sophisticated. So the servants, so many servants of Krishna, friends of Krishna like Arjuna, it is not so easy to be a friend. There are more servants than friends. Arjuna, he'll walk side by side casually with Krishna, chatting and conversing. As Arjuna noted during the discussion of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna would lie on the same bed and joke with Krishna. Not everyone can do that. There may be many servants who always have to keep a relationship of awe and reverence. But for a friend, they have a very intimate connection. So one can also be a friend of Krishna. One can also be a parent of Krishna. In the Christian religion, they speak of God the Father. But in Vaishnava understanding, you can be the father of God. no one can be the father of God because he is the father of all living beings. But if one has so much affection for him that one desires to serve him in the way that a father or a mother serves their child. Actually, the parents serve the children. When they're grown up, they're supposed to serve their parents, because the way the children are served by the parents in the childhood is it's not possible to repay. The parents fully give themselves to their children. That's how it's supposed to be. In modern materialistic, consumeristic life, the parents are out at work and the children are in some pre-kindergarten. Kindergarten was supposed to be preschool, and then they had pre-kindergarten. So that the mothers don't have to be burdened with looking after them. The modern Western social outlook that is that to be a mother is a burden. Of course it is a burden, but it's all over the world that's traditionally been seen as a pleasure, burden of love, but now it's just a burden because it seems there's not that much love around. There's more love of money than love of children. So one can love Krishna as a parent to a child, and one can love Krishna in the very intimate relationship of a wife or even a girlfriend. That's not materialistic. To have a girlfriend is nowadays completely normal in the Western culture. It's still not fully accepted in Indian culture, which is trying to become American as fast as it can. But generally all over the world, in traditional cultures, One gets married and has a wife, and then extramarital sex. There is a word for it in English, which is now practically... You may not even have heard the word. The word is fornication. It means extramarital sex. But no one uses the word anymore because it's not considered... It's just considered normal, and so what? But in traditional cultures, people had to get married. Sexual life is not by any means... It's definitely there in Vedic culture, but it's within the home, within the family, within responsibility. And it's a big responsibility. But with the advent of the consumer society and the sex is just for fun and... Children, if you have them, well, that's not so important. You can abandon them. So a very different concept of life. One can also, as I was saying, one can become the lover of Krishna. That in Krishna's love with his gopis, the famous gopis of Vrindavan, that is, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching, Ramya ka chitu pasana vrajavadhu vargena ya kalpita. The highest kind of bhakti or love for Krishna is that of the gopis of Vrindavan. Because why? Because they fully gave themselves to Krishna without any formality. So in this material world, to do so is that is not at all praiseworthy. It even materially, it simply results in distress. But this is the goal of life. Materialism, I, me, and mine, simply leads one to birth after birth. In this life, we think, I am American, this is my country, this is my wife, this is my husband. Then we get another life in which we think, I am a dog, this is my master, this is my master. Then we get another life in which we are an insect, and we think, I am an insect, and this is my food, or whatever an insect is attached to. Every living being is attached to something. So this concept of I, me, and mine, materialism, has to be spiritualized by understanding I am an Atma, I am spiritual, I am internal, I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Amito toma tumito amar ki kaj apare dhane. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, praying to Krishna, I am yours, you are mine. What need is there of anyone else's wealth or anything else? This is spiritual consciousness. We don't say to stop thinking in terms of I am me and mine, but to understand who I actually am. What is actually mine? In one sense, nothing is mine, because everything belongs to Krishna. But I also belong to Krishna. And Krishna is so kind that if we give ourselves to Him in love, then He will give Himself to us. So, please don't be materialistic. Try to understand the actual purpose of life. And again, being religious is not simply enough. There are so many religions. I see different posters and calendars around here of different religious groups. Generally, people think that religion means belonging to some group. But if we are actually serious about spiritual life, we should find that guidance by which we can become free from illusion, become free from birth and death. Therefore, another very important term in Vedic terminology. I don't know if this word will ever come into English as the words guru, karma, yoga, and so many other words have come, because it's not a term that people like very much. The term is siddhanta, which means proper understanding. So most people are not interested in proper understanding, but there should be proper understanding. Why are most Hindus in the world Hindus? What's the answer? Because they're born in a Hindu family. Why are most Muslims in the world Muslim? Because they're born in a Muslim family. They don't question or answer or ask or think. They just think, well, everyone else around me is like that, so I'll be like this also. They don't even think that far. But Siddhanta comes, beginning is Atato Brahma Jignasa. The beginning of spiritual understanding is to inquire about the nature of reality. And if we see the material outlook, there's got to be more to it. There's got to be more to life than simply punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, getting born again and dying again. It's got to be something more than this. So the beginning is inquiry into the nature of the Absolute. And the conclusion, what is the ultimate conclusion? One should understand that. So the ultimate conclusion is given in Bhagavad Gita. Vaidaischa sarvair ahameva vedya, Krishna says. In all the Vedas, Veda means knowledge, I, Krishna, am the object of knowledge. Okay, I'll finish there, as I could probably speak much longer, but I'm advised not to speak too long because people don't like it. Their attention span is short, and unless you tell many jokes and stories, they don't like to listen, even if they're hearing that which is for their ultimate benefit. Because we're used to instant, stupid gratification, such as surfing around on the internet, around different TV channels, to get some instant gratification. So it's very difficult for people to think more deeply than the superficial level, and therefore attention spans are short. Hare Krishna. Thank you for listening patiently. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions? Anyone want to prolong the agony? Actually, this is bliss. After many lifetimes, we have the opportunity to even think about such topics. I spoke strongly about sex life in the material situation. I did, but it wasn't just something off the top of my head. I was quoting Srimad Bhagavatam, Rishabhadev.
All right, and then we have so many grihasthas, even in the movement in ISKCON. What is the correct position or the correct behavior for grihasthas?
What is the correct behavior for a grihastha? Well, I did cover that in the lecture also. Can anyone remember what I said in that regard? Maybe I didn't elaborate on it so much. Yeah, I stated that it's knowing that this world is temporary doesn't mean that one should whimsically. I didn't say that in this lecture, but I said that in grihastha life there is responsibility. Once you enter grihastha life, you have the responsibility toward your, that is your dharma. which you have to pursue. So I can underline that by saying that although philosophically it could be stated that one should just leave everything and take sannyas, that is not recommended. Generally, there are some cases of young men who left their wives and took sannyas. There are some cases. Ramanuja. But if you're not Ramanuja, it's probably... You've all heard of Ramanuja Acharya? Even in Tamil Nadu, there are many people who never heard of him. He was a great Vaishnava Acharya. Great is too commonly used a word to describe the glories of Ramanuja. So there is a book derived from a biography of his. There is in English a biography of Ramanuja. They leave some of the things out. I guess they don't want to say everything in that book. Srila Prabhupada also gave sannyas to young men, but generally I myself certainly, I don't think anyone in ISKCON these days recommends young men with families to abandon them. You have to see, once you take that responsibility, you have to see it through. But at the same time, as I also mentioned during the lecture, listening? You asked the question. One should hear such lectures as such points from sannyasis. It's the duty of the sannyasis to visit grihasthas, not to entertain them. There is scope for what we might call entertaining religious discussion. There is scope for that. But that's not the duty of sannyasis. The sannyasis are meant for giving spiritual enlightenment. So that's one reason also sannyasis are not supposed to stay more than 3 days in one place. It becomes too much for the grihasthas to hear so much intense discussion. They need short bursts. And then gradually, as one gets older, one should be aware of this and gradually become detached. And then vanaprastha life, in which one desists from further sexual activity and either travels with his wife to holy places, or at home engages, increase. There may be a gradual progression from grihastha to vanaprastha life, but gradually gives the charge of the family to the eldest son. That was the system. And then the elderly parents, they engage in religious, spiritual activities. And then one may or may not accept sannyas. But so grihasthas should go on being responsible grihasthas. And part of being a responsible grihastha is to cultivate a sense of detachment. So, not that one neglects one's family members or one's family duties or doesn't show affection to them, but one should know that everything in this world is temporary. I have no permanent relationship with this person who I think as my child, except in Krishna consciousness. And when the time is right, then one can become detached. And in special, I mean, literally detached from family affairs. And in some special cases, a young man with a wife may also accept sannyas, but that's not the norm. Okay, so I think we'll finish there. You have a question also? Why is illusion there? Why are we in illusion? Well, there's a story in Mahabharata about this, in which a king called all his ministers, means Brahmins. He asked them, why are we in illusion? And they all gave different answers. You'll get so many different answers. So they all gave their answers, all of the ministers, except there was one who was just sitting quietly and not saying anything. He was a very old and respected Brahmana. So after they'd all given their answers, the king asked the senior Brahmana, so, what's your answer? Why are we all in illusion? The Brahmana stood up, he ran to a pillar in the hall, hugged it tightly and said, let me go, let me go, let me go, let me go. They thought he'd all become mad. Then after a few minutes of shouting, let me go, let me go, he said, this is why we're in illusion. We're holding on to Maya, and at the same time, we make a pretense of saying, let me go. We're in illusion because we want to be, because we like thinking, Ishvaro Hamaham Bhogi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. It's something like an addiction. Even if you know it's harmful, it's as if impelled. As if we are impelled. Arjuna asked this question to Krishna. Atakena prayuktayam papam charati purushaha anichan api varshnaya baladiva niyojitaha. Arjuna asked Krishna, why is it that we perform sinful activities even though we don't want to, as if we are forced to? Do you know the answer? No, you don't know that, I presume. So Krishna answered, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Rajoguna Samudbhavaha, Mahashano Mahapatmo, Vidhena Mihavayarnam. Krishna says it is material desire and krodha means anger, frustration, which are produced of rajoguna, means the desire, strong desire for enjoyment. Ishvaro hamaham bhogi. It's born of this, which mahashana means that which ashana means fire. It means that which devours us. We are as if devoured by desire, which is greatly sinful, and one should know this to be one's great enemy. What is the nature of karma? Material desire has been succinctly analyzed in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. If we can remember this one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, just this one verse, we can always keep on track in our spiritual life. I recommend that you all, it's not very well known. I mean, the Gita shlokas are much better known among pious Hindus. But this one verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita puts everything in perspective. Atendriya priti icha tare bale kam, Krishnendriya priti vancha dhare premana. This is Some people say that you should just stop all desire, but that's not possible because the very nature of the Atma is to be conscious, Sat Chit Ananda. Chit means there's Chetna. So with Chetna, consciousness comes desire. So it's not possible to be free from desire, but this is the crux, this Atendriya Pri. The idea, the thought of satisfying my own senses, that is called karma. I shall be satisfied. Let me do everything for my own satisfaction. And we find that every living being, human, non-human, animal, plant, every living being, everything they do at every moment is for their own pleasure and to ward off any discomfort or danger. And their pleasure, that may also include sacrificing one's life for one's country. You may say, well, that's not for your own pleasure. That's also one kind of pleasure. Because we think, I'm doing it for my country. Because one identifies one's pleasure with the pleasure of others. So that's also one kind of illusion. But Krishnendriya Priti Vancha Dhare Premana, the desire to satisfy Krishna's transcendental senses, that is called prema. So, the word prema, we hear a lot. But we don't hear so much about sharanagati, or surrender to Krishna. Which means that we have to, somehow there's this unspoken idea that you can have prema and karma at the same time. But because they are definitionally opposite, it's not possible to have them at the same time. We have to choose. Do we want to serve Krishna? Or do we want to attempt to serve our own senses and be happy independently from Krishna? This, the cause of illusion, why are we in illusion? Because of our own wrong decision to abandon the service of Krishna and try to be happy independently of Krishna.
Jai Vishwa
with a question over phone. Yeah, well, here we go. This is 21st century satsang.
I guess number one, you have a question. I can repeat it for you.
Jai Vishwa Prabhu was he was very happy last time I came to Miami. I think it was 2 years ago on Radhashtami in the temple there. I quoted this verse Pungsastriya, which I also quoted here. He was very happy that I'd quoted that verse. He said, I didn't hear that verse quoted here in years and years. I quoted that verse on Radhashtami to demonstrate the difference between Radha Krishna Prema and materialistic attraction between male and female, that we shouldn't equate the two. One is a perverse reflection of the other. But we shouldn't think that. We should understand the science of Krishna consciousness. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. Otherwise, if we hear about Radha and Krishna without understanding who is Krishna and who is Radha, then if we don't understand, then we'll misunderstand. And then we're liable to make offense. So, what is the question? Obeisance to Jai Dvaj Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
Maharaj, forgive right now.
Yes, Prabhu, go ahead.
No, Maharaj is talking. You want to go on the speaker or you want me to...
You're already on speaker. Everyone can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to interfere Maharaj.
No, Maharaj is gone. Maharaj is done speaking. You can place your question.
Yes. First of all, I wanted to give my respectful obeisances to Maharaj. He has done a very beautiful class. And as a grihastha, I really like to hear more about these classes. Yes.
Well, on my website there are more than 2,000 lectures, thanks to Radhananda and others. So you can ask Radhananda about that if you. Or you can listen to Prabhupada's lectures. I mean, where did I learn all this stuff from anyway? Yeah. Is Srila Prabhupada, there are certain verses which he would regularly repeat, and the ones which I quoted today were all that I learned them all from Srila Prabhupada.
Yes. Yes, my question is, in Kali Yuga, there's so many devotees living in the life.
So many devotees what?
Go ahead, Prabhupada. Can you repeat?
There's so many devotees? Yeah, it's getting a bit into the details here. I'm not sure if I should speak in a public assembly about so many things. But I think you've given the point, so I'll let you do it. I've spoken on the principles, you as a grihastha can give the details.
Any more questions?
No, I think we should finish because people have to go to work and school and everything else, and they have to take prasadam. I don't know what the time. What is the time? Oh, I spoke a long time, huh?